From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, incredible work by reporter Leslie Kane. UFOs, generals, pilots, and government officials go on the record. An absolutely riveting book. Here's what's happening. A Swedish man has been arrested after trying to split atoms in his kitchen. He said he was only doing it as a hobby. Richard Handler says that he had radioactive elements in his apartment in southern Sweden when police showed up and arrested him on charges of unauthorized possession of nuclear material. The 31-year-old said he had tried for months to set up a reactor at his home and kept a blog about his experiments, describing how he created a small meltdown on his stove. Well, they got him. In Los Angeles, a combined force of feds and Los Angeles police raided a market in Venice, California, for the crime of selling raw milk and products made from raw organic milk. The owner of the Rossum Foods, James Stewart, was arrested, being held on $123,000 bail. He'll be charged with conspiracy to commit a crime. Additional people arrested included Sharon Palmer of Healthy Family Farms, currently in jail. And Palmer was featured in the documentary Farmageddon, and also Victoria Block, an L.A. County liaison for what is called the Weston A. Price Foundation. She's been arrested as well. Law enforcement said the food was unpasteurized. The Agriculture Department says meat giant Cargill is recalling, get this, 36 million pounds of ground turkey linked to a death in California and at least 76 other salmonella illnesses. Illnesses in the outbreak date back to March and have been reported now in 26 states, coast to coast. If you have any of these products, call your store. A strain of salmonella resistance to the most powerful antibiotics has now been found in the United Kingdom, France, and Denmark. The outbreak apparently emerged in Africa, spread to Europe, picking up antibiotic resistance along the way, according to a team of researchers. They are calling on health officials to step up monitoring to stop the superbug from spreading globally. And that means coming here. Bubba Smith, 10-year NFL veteran and film actor of Police Academy fame, found dead in his Los Angeles home. He was 66. Police haven't determined the cause of death yet. Friends say natural causes. Known for his imposing 6'7" frame, Smith retired from the NFL in 1976, and he turned his focus to acting. A report claiming that the Internet Explorer users that scored lower on IQ tests than users of other web browsers turns out to have been an elaborate hoax. This report went all over the world based on the survey, supposedly, of 100,000 internet users, was released last week by what appeared to be a Vancouver-based web consulting firm. So those of you who use Internet Explorer, you can breathe a little easier. Your IQ is intact. A tiny second moon may once have orbited Earth before catastrophically slamming into the other one, a titanic clash that could explain why the two sides of the moon we now have are so different from each other, according to a new study. The author, of course, Eric Aspog, who says the second moon would have been about 750 miles wide, could have formed from the same collision between the planet and a Mars-sized object that scientists suspect helped create the moon that we see in the sky today. Eric is a professor in the Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences at the University of California at Santa Cruz. Eric, this is a great discovery. How did you discover this? How did you come to this theory?
Well, you know, it happened by sort of a coincidence of a couple of lines of thought. You know, I had been studying collisions for a long time. And in fact, I was one of the researchers who had been studying the origin of the moon by a giant impact. This is, if you look out the window and look at the moon tonight, it's dipping down. And we all grow up looking at the moon, and so it was this fundamental puzzle. You know, how did it come to be? And the basic idea is that a planet about the size of Mars collided with the Earth, shortly after the Earth formed, about 4.5 billion years ago. And it spawned a big debris disk, and out of this debris disk emerged the moon. That's a theory. It's the standard working hypothesis. Now, you wouldn't just form one moon. You'd actually form a couple of moons. You know, it's a big, messy debris disk. And so we started thinking about what's the ultimate fate of these other moons. People had kind of discarded the idea because they usually crash into the Earth, crash into the moon. They clear out of the picture pretty soon. But there are a couple of pockets. If you were to be on the surface of the Earth looking out at the moon at this very early stage, well, for one thing, you'd better have a lava protective suit because the Earth is going to be this big molten planet
sure.
at the time. The moon would have a couple of other moons trapped in orbits, leading it and trailing it. So you'd have a moonrise, and then you'd have another moonrise, and then you'd have another moonrise. Now, so we started thinking about this. Now, what happens to these moons in time? Well, one thing we know that occurs is that the moon recedes away from the Earth. We measure that today. The moon next year is going to be 4 inches farther away from the Earth than it is today. And so you go back in time and you think, well, what happens as the moon expands away from the Earth? What happens is that about 100 million years after the moon formed, these other moons go unstable. They no longer are locked into their orbits around the Earth, and the likely fate is for them to crash into the moon.
And they could have just as easily have hit Earth, right?
Well, not really, because they're orbiting the Earth just like the moon is. It just so happens that the moon exerts a tug on them that keeps them just in the right spot.
So okay.
They never have a lunar collision. So once they go unhinged, they're orbiting the Earth in the same orbit that the moon is, and that's bad news for them.
750 miles wide, it hits the current moon that we have now. Does it do anything to the moon in terms of alter its orbit or anything like that, Eric?
Well, it's small compared to the moon. It's about 1/30th the mass, and so it gives it a fair nudge. It doesn't throw it out of its orbit. It might change its orbit slightly, but pretty much its orbit's going to be the way it was. It might give it a bit of spin. If the moon was locked to the Earth the way it is today, one side always facing the Earth, it might have locked it out, knocked it out of this lock, you know, kind of like a wheel starting to spin
sure.
and comes and settles back down again. The main thing it did, and this was the big surprise of the study, we expected when we simulated this with a computer code that models collisions, we expected it would form a crater, it would blast stuff out of the side, you know, kind of like what happens when you fire a bullet into some mud.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get that at all. And part of that is because this is a pretty low velocity collision. It's sharing an orbit with the moon, so when it hits the moon, it's not coming from far in space. It's coming from right next door and just kind of dropping in on the moon and lands as slow as possible. It's still screaming in at 2 kilometers per second, I'm not sure how many miles per hour that is, but it's about 5 times faster than a rifle bullet. So it's a very fast speed from our experience, but cosmically, it's kind of a slow landing.
And the current move does what? Just kind of sucks it in?
It crashes like a mud clot on a wall. It really doesn't create much of a crater at all. It splats onto one hemisphere, and so it coats one side, kind of like you threw a water balloon at somebody's face, and it just drenches them. This is kind of the same effect, and instead of making a crater, it coats the moon. And so according to our theory, when you're looking at the far side of the moon, which none of us can do unless we go into orbit behind the moon.
That's right.
It's always facing the Earth. In fact, we never saw the far side of the moon until 1959. That was the first picture.
Because of the Soviets, right?
That was the Soviets. That's a Luna 3 mission, and that started the space race and ended up putting American astronauts on the moon. And this was a... you know, this feature that we're trying to explain is the fact that the far side of the moon, it's thick crusted. It's got about 100 miles thick crust, and the near side has a crust maybe half as thick.
And see, that might explain the difference. Eric, thanks so much for that study. It's kind of romantic just to think about the possibilities that we had two moons out there. Dramatic story. You know, we've been following the case of D.B. Cooper, and he's the person who, back in 1971, parachuted to the ground with $200,000 after he hijacked a plane. Well, now a woman claiming to be the niece of the infamous skyjacker D.B. Cooper has spoken out to ABC News and told of her role in the recently reignited 40-year-old cold case that has haunted the FBI for years. Marla Cooper says that she has provided the FBI with a guitar strap and a Christmas photo of a man pictured with the same strap who she says is her uncle Lynn Doyle Cooper. And of course, she went on to explain that Lynn Doyle Cooper and his brother and their brother, who happened to be Marla's father, all knew about something very strange going on here, and that Mr. Lynn Doyle Cooper disappeared after a little bit, came back a few days later, all tattered and bloody, wearing a white T-shirt, bruised, and they all said, "Marla, shut up and go get your dad." Marla is now convinced that there was not a car accident involved, which the uncle said he was in, but that her uncle was injured, crashing to the earth in a parachute, and says that she also remembers a discussion about huge money that day. So maybe it's slowly getting solved. Unemployment, by the way, rose in more than 90% of U.S. cities in June, mirroring a national slowdown in hiring. Investment advisor Miss Shedlock with us. Miss, still not good news. You got to get people to work if we're going to turn this economy around, don't we?
Oh, my gosh, yes. But how are we going to get people to work when we're seeing numbers like what we're seeing today? Durable goods orders sank 2.1%. Non-defense orders sunk 4.1%. That's like furniture, cars, things people want to buy for their houses. The manufacturing ISM on August 1st reported it's almost in contraction. Manufacturing almost in contraction. New orders are in contraction. So if new orders aren't coming in, where's the hiring going to come from that? So the services ISM came out today. The services ISM was bad, and there were a whole bunch of anomalies in there. New orders were falling. Employment was falling. Supplier deliveries was falling. The overall number went up. Well, that tells you, okay, we're producing goods, but who are we going to sell them to? Exports were down. Imports were down. Backlog of orders is in contraction. New export orders are in contraction. I think next month's ISM numbers are going to be a disaster.
We got to see them. Mish, thanks so much. A woman who became obsessed with eating whole lettuces has been diagnosed with cancer after her husband insisted she see a doctor. Elsie Campbell's husband, Jim, a research scientist, suspected something was very wrong when her cravings escalated to eating 4 whole lettuces a day. Mr. Campbell looked at his wife's body and figured it could be lacking something that was found in lettuce containing a nutrient that is often lacking in breast cancer sufferers. He insisted that she see a doctor, and after a small dimple appeared on her breast, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. Following the early diagnosis, she had the lump removed and had months of treatment, given an all clear now. She said, "Strangely, since the lump was removed, I haven't wanted to eat a single lettuce leaf. The cravings completely gone." Up next, Coast to Coast regular guest Catherine Albrecht with us, who has had some of her own medical problems, and she'll talk about that in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Catherine Albrecht is a consumer privacy expert, a vice president of StartPage.com, a private search engine. Catherine, widely recognized as one of the world's leading experts on consumer privacy, a regular guest and contributor here on Coast to Coast AM with privacy issues, but she hasn't been on in quite a while. There's a reason for that. Here's Catherine Albrecht. How you doing, Catherine?
Hey, George. It is terrific to be back. It has been a little while, hasn't it?
Are you fighting the good fight?
I am. And, you know, for your listeners who have been praying for me, I want to say thank you. And for people who maybe didn't catch those couple of shows or don't quite know what's going on, I was actually diagnosed with breast cancer myself back in January. And I know you just had a story about the lady eating lettuce.
Yeah.
I didn't quite go down that road.
You didn't have that craving, did you?
No, I didn't. But, you know, I've definitely been through a lot in the last couple of months. There is a rumor going around of people who've been kind of following, you know, my circumstances over the last, I don't know how long I've been coming on this show.
Years.
A long time. But, you know, the rumor going around that I have stage 4 terminal cancer, I just want to publicly quash that rumor. It is not true. I do have what is known as stage 3 cancer, which is means that it hasn't spread, it hasn't metastasized, it's not in, you know, the liver or the organs, and that's really how cancer, you know, becomes so deadly, is it starts off as a tumor in one part of the body, and then if you don't catch it in time, it kind of, you know, it acts as the mothership. This is a good show to talk about some
you
of
got,
that.
You got that right.
So you got kind of the mothership, and it sort of sends out little cells into the body through the lymphatic system and tries to colonize distant parts of the body. And that has not happened in my case, praise God. We caught it in time, but it was a big tumor. You know, the size of, I'd probably liken it to the size and shape of a little mouse that you might find in, you know.
How did you know something was wrong?
Well, around Christmas time of last year, I actually started getting some pain, and it felt like somebody was poking me in the breast with a pencil. And I did some, you know, looking around online, and pain is actually, you know, from everything I could read, they said, oh, well, if you're having pain, don't worry. It's probably not cancer, because cancer doesn't cause pain. Well, in my case, thank God I had the pain, because that's what got me to pay attention and got me in to see, you know, my doctor. And actually, I was scheduled for a regular annual physical, and I said, you know, I'm having this weird pain here, and I don't know if there's a lump. And, you know, for all you women listening out there, they're probably thinking, you know, how could you miss something that huge in your breast? And the reality is, you know, breasts are lumpy, and they change, you know, with your monthly cycle, and they kind of go through all these various sort of lumpy phases. And, you know, I just figured it was part of that. And she took one look, and, you know, as the woman you were just talking about, there's a little dimple there, and she said, I think we need to get you in for a mammogram. And I went in for that, and you know, that's kind of how it began snowballing and turned into, you know, this diagnosis. And I'll tell you, talk about being scared out of your mind. I'm a relatively young person, and I just never... You know, I eat right, as my radio listeners to my radio show know. I'm always talking about health and don't use Teflon and stay away from, you know, the hydrogenated oils and no high fructose corn syrup, blah blah blah. And you know, I've really, you know, we eat organic produce and do everything right. And so it really was, you know, a huge shock.
Was it in your family? Genetic?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting situation. I've actually had the test. There's a gene that goes awry for a very small percentage of women called the BRCA gene, and I had the test. It's like a $3,000 test, and I don't have that. I don't have that genetic defect. But, you know, most women who get breast cancer don't. So it kind of runs in families. You know, they haven't quite figured out what that relationship is, but they're really, you know, I lost a beloved aunt to breast cancer, my mother's sister. Died of breast cancer, you know, about 10 years ago, and she was young. She was in her early 50s when she mm-hmm. got breast cancer. So yeah, I mean, it's in the family. But I got to tell you, George, what I'm learning now with 1 in 8 women in America coming down with breast cancer—that's
huge.
1 in 8 women
That's huge.
In their lifetime. You know, there's not a person out there you could say is it in your family who can't look, you know, extendedly through their family and say no. I mean, it's affecting millions of women.
What are you doing? Are you going traditional? Are you going alternative? What are you doing now?
Boy, have I ever had a learning curve. Well, as you know, George, and as your listeners know, I have a doctorate from Harvard, and you know, there's lots of upsides and downsides to spending 12 years at an Ivy League institution.
Yeah.
But one of the things they taught me, and one of the things I'm really grateful to them for, is they taught me really how to do research and how to separate the garbage from the facts. And so I have spent the last 6 months of my life, you know me, I mean, I throw myself into my research, and I'm like a bulldog. I don't let go till I understand what's going on, whether it's RFID or microchips or you know, Google and privacy, and you know, that's just what I do. So obviously when cancer comes along, I'm going to dive in and read everything I can find. And what I found, and this is fascinating, I mean, I could do hours talking about this. What I found is that there is this huge war. There's like this enormous gulf between, on the one side, the sort of conventional medicine folks, you know, your oncology people, your cancer mm-hmm. researchers, and then on the other side, the natural sort of alternative approach.
And let's come right back to that, Catherine, in just a moment. And I really want to know exactly what you've been doing for yourself. As you know, Most of us on this program are alternative medicine people with a little help of mainstream medicine as well. We'll also take some phone calls with Catherine as we get into some privacy issues right here on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, a classic Coast to Coast show with Leslie Kane as we talk about generals, pilots, and government officials who are going on the record, UFOs. Get ready for that program. When we come back with Catherine Albrecht, we'll take your phone calls as we talk about privacy issues and what she's doing for herself in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, we're with Catherine Albrecht. We'll take your calls. Catherine, before we get into some privacy issues and some calls coming in here for you, so what are you doing for yourself?
Well, you know, I was saying before the break that I'm a researcher, and so I'm picking and choosing the best of both. You know, by the time I caught this cancer, it was advanced enough that, you know, just doing the natural juices and all this stuff, I tried doing that. I actually spent a couple of months trying to do that, and it didn't work. It did not shrink the tumor. The tumor was growing, and because I lost an aunt to this who did the natural route, you know, she did the garlic and the juicing and all that, and she died. And so, you know, there comes a point when you say, I'm going to take the best of both worlds, and I am doing that. So I'm doing chemotherapy. I'm doing radiation. I'm doing it very thoughtfully. I'm combining it with a whole lot of natural supplements and things to kind of help me get through that and not trash my body in the process.
Good. Are you taking turmeric?
Right.
I'm curious.
I am not only taking turmeric. It's actually curcumin, which is the extract.
That's it. That's what you need.
I am like the biggest believer in this in the world. And I actually truly believe, George, after my research, if every person in this country would take curcumin, we would eliminate cancer. I really believe that.
I think so, too. This is going to be interesting. I want you to give us some progress reports on this, too, would you?
I sure will. And, you know, I'm learning so much. when this is over, I'm going to have, I'm probably going to write a book. I mean, I have just amassed so much information. And I learned a lot about God, too. I mean, my faith has always been strong.
Sure.
And, you know, when you get hit with a breast cancer diagnosis, you say, you know, God, are you even out there? Do you just hate me?
Well, you know, I've been talking about you to Lisa and Tom, producers, just for months now because I've been getting all kinds of stories about you.
Well,
I kept saying, Lisa, check with Catherine. Tom, what's going on?
I did. And I don't want to leave that comment just with that. But you know, the comment about my faith, I have come over the last 6 months to a whole new understanding of what God is doing in our lives. And it's unbelievable. You would never think that he could use cancer in a positive way. And he has, like, healed relationships and fixed things that have been broken for years. I mean, it's been really extraordinary. So I want to thank all the Coast listeners out there. I know a lot of you guys emailed me. I know a lot of you guys have been praying for me. And I just want to say thank you because your prayers are working, and I'm doing great.
All right, let's go to the call. Sue in Chico, California. You're up, Sue. Go ahead.
Hi, Catherine.
Yeah, hi, Sue.
Hi. I've got a quick privacy question, please.
Sure.
Once a year, I have to get questioned by the estate workers about housekeeping stuff, and they ask me really stupid stuff, like, can you bathe yourself? Can you dress yourself? I'm a blind person, and I think this is really stupid. What can I do to get around this?
You know, it depends on the agency and how crucial it is. The thing, Sue, that amazes me is a lot of these questions, if you just say you refuse to answer, then they leave you alone. You know, all those forms that we fill out that ask for your social security number or all this information, try leaving them blank. And it's amazing. I'd say probably 3 out of 4 times I leave those things blank. They just take the form and don't ever even ask me about it. Or I'll just write NA, you know, not applicable. And like they just go, okay. So, you know, we're volunteering, I think, more than we have to in a lot of these cases. So I would say, you know, if they want to know, can you bathe yourself? And you say, you know, I consider that a personal question. I'm not comfortable answering that. I bet you that there's a really good chance that they'll say, okay. You know, nobody's holding us at gunpoint for most of these questions. And I think, you know, we figure if it's on a form, we have to answer it. And I've learned over the years, you don't, you know, for a lot of this stuff. So good luck with that.
Catherine, Los Angeles has stopped its red light traffic program because they just say it doesn't work. You can't enforce it. What do you think?
Well, hallelujah.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
Victory.
But, you know, the problem, George, is that, you know, are they taking down the cameras? You know, you install all this stuff, you create the infrastructure.
No, they haven't taken them down yet.
Yeah, well, I'll believe it when they're gone. That's when I'll believe it. And given the amount of money that they invested in that infrastructure, it would surprise me if they actually took them down and didn't just put them to a different purpose.
Good point.
I'm skeptical, yeah. But, you know, it's a move in the right direction. At least they're talking the right talk. Now they just have to walk the walk.
Let's go to Fort Pierce, Florida, east of the Rockies. Hey, Betty, go ahead.
Hi, yes. I've been doing a lot of research myself about tumors and how oxygen, they can't grow around oxygen, like taking peroxide, drinking baking soda and water.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a preventative measure against getting tumors. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I've been reading a lot of that too, and I can tell you because I'm a trained researcher, I'm really going with where I can see the actual statistics and the animal studies and the human studies. And I got to say, the most promising study that I've seen, if you're concerned about preventing cancer, and I'll say it again, it's curcumin. It is that yellow spice that they put in curry. There's research out of MD Anderson where they're actually using curcumin instead of or in addition to chemotherapy with hundreds of patients.
Isn't that amazing,
Catherine? It's really working. They've even found that they cannot give mice prostate cancer if they've given them curcumin. They cannot give it to them. 100% of the mice in one study were immune to prostate cancer.
That is remarkable. Yeah, we've been talking about this for 2.5 years now. But
yeah, and you know, in India, their rates of breast cancer are a fraction of what ours are.
That's true.
And I think it all just comes down to, well, first of all, vitamin D, which is the sun exposure in India, and then second of all, curcumin. I mean, because it, you know, they're eating those spices all day long, and those spices are powerful, good stuff. So, you know, everybody, add some Indian food to your diet would be a good move. Hey, and George, you know, I also want to say one other thing about just sort of the last 6 months, and I got to put in a good word for StartPage, which is the company that I work for. Talk about an extraordinary degree of support. You know, startpage.com, which is the world's most private search engine, I'm always trying to get people switch from Google, which is tracking you all the time, over to StartPage. I'll spell it S-T-A-R-T, like start, page, P-A-G-E. As you know, I first had them on my radio show a couple of years ago because I was freaking out over what Google was doing with tracking everybody's searches and using the stuff that we look up online to create a database of our interests. And people don't realize this, but we've all got a dossier over there at Google on their servers, and they know everything we've ever searched for. They, you know, talk about private stuff. I mean, I'm searching for, you know, breast cancer information and insurance information. And if I were doing that through Google, they would be logging every step of it. They would know what drugs I was taking. They would know what chemo regimen I'm on. They'd know it all because I'd be typing it all in, right?
Yeah, of course.
You put it there, and Google just sits like a spider in its web and collects all that. So StartPage, I had him on my show as a guest, fell in love with the company, said, I love you guys. How can I support you? And they hired me on as a VP. So I love them. And during the 6 months that I have been battling cancer, as you can imagine, you know, I've been down for the count, you know, for a big part of that. And I have never been with such a wonderful company that has been so supportive. So all the StartPage.com users out there, thank you for using StartPage. And I also want to say that StartPage, if you haven't gotten the memo yet, all you people who are using Google and say, well, I can't switch to StartPage because I need those Google results and Google's got the best results on the internet, StartPage is now actually returning Google results, total Google results, but completely privately. And, you know, everybody sees, like, what does it say, enhanced by Google now at StartPage.com? And they go, oh, are you working with Google? And quite the opposite. What we're actually doing is when you type in a search like breast cancer, StartPage goes out to Google, submits the query. So Google doesn't see you. They just see
StartPage.
Yeah. Submits the query, gets the Google results back through the StartPage server, and then serves them to the user.
Smart.
So it's awesome stuff. And again, I just have to put in a plug because they've been so wonderful to me through this horrible ordeal.
Super. Let's go to Steve, Fort Wayne, Indiana, east of the Rockies. Hey, Steve, go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Catherine, just a couple little quick tips here. Maybe you can light a little research fire here. Keeping your body alkali, eating and having a heavily alkali diet.
Yep.
Cancer cannot exist in an alkali state body. And if you can do a little research on frankincense and myrrh,
I take them as a supplement. And as far as the alkaline thing, you know, I have the little pea strips, you know, talking on the radio.
Well, were you acidic? Were you acidic when you first found out you had cancer?
Most of us are pretty much all the time is what I've discovered. You know, I've been talking to other people about this, and you can tell if you switch your diet over to you know, raw vegetables and cooked vegetables and juices and salmon and, you know, really healthy things.
It'll change.
You'll see it switch.
Yep. You stay away from sugar and starchy stuff.
Right.
You watch it change.
It's totally true. And, yes, so there is something to that. I don't think it's enough to cure cancer by itself. But I definitely think that it's enough to create a healthy environment that makes it more difficult for a cancer to get a hold of you.
No sense letting it fester in an environment it enjoys.
That's right. And, you know, when all this is over, and I know I'm going to get a ton of email going, Catherine, why are you doing chemo? Trust me, I've done a million tons of research. I've been, like, all over this.
And you know what? It's your life. Catherine,
it is.
It's your
and,
business.
You know, in my case, it's the right solution. And for people out there who know, I have HER2 positive breast cancer, which is really aggressive and used to be a death sentence before Herceptin, which is an awesome drug that, you know, it cuts your recurrence rate in half. So, you know, there are drugs out there that really do work. Don't dispose of the research that's been done. You know, I've talked to so many women who say, you know, I'm just not even going to go that route. And I say, you know, you're throwing away a whole lot of valuable stuff that's out there. So, you know, it's a balance. You got to do both. And when the chemo is done, I am going to, believe me, I am going to detox completely. I'm going to do the natural juicing. I'm going to do all of it because I'm going to need to get my body back in top form when all this is over. But right now, I got to kill the cancer.
That's right, because we have 3-hour shows to do, Catherine, and you've got to get ready for that.
Absolutely.
Let's go to Los Angeles. Charles. Hey, Charles, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I just had a couple questions I was going to ask. First of all, I'm 77, and I haven't had a sick day in over 60-some years.
Good for you.
I thought, and I don't, of course, take the flu shots.
Me either.
I know. I just wondered if she has, in the past, been eating soy.
You know, I did. Years ago, I was actually a vegetarian before we knew that soy was estrogenic and basically toxic.
Yeah.
I haven't touched soy in years and years. I don't know how much damage I did to my body with the soy, and I probably trashed my thyroid with it. So anybody out there listening, that's kind of one of my big bailiwicks as well. You know, the soy right now is what, like 90% of it is genetically modified. It is causing sterilization if you feed it to hamsters. It actually makes them sterile after a couple of generations.
Yeah.
You know, their testicles turn black. I mean, I'm like, whoa, this should not be in our diet. So, no, I stay away from it.
That's great. Even if it's organic, it's no good. Any
right.
kind of soy, that's tofu or soy sauce or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's and in fact, feeding babies soy formula, there's some research out there that says it's equivalent to giving babies a birth control pill a day.
Oh, my God.
The amount
of
hormone that's being transmitted through the soy. It's a phytoestrogen, and it's a powerful hormone.
Do you use a microwave?
Really bad for babies.
Do you use a microwave?
I do not.
Good. That's good. How about cell phones?
You know, I'm guilty on that one.
We all do.
But I also, because I do research into radio frequency stuff, I know that around my cell phone antenna, there is a basketball-sized sphere of danger.
Yeah.
So I want everybody to picture your cell phone in the middle of a basketball. Never let that basketball anywhere near your head,
yeah.
your heart, or your reproductive organs. So I use a corded headpiece, you know, a little headset, not a Bluetooth, but a cord to keep that thing away from my body. But, yeah, you know, in the modern world, it is so hard to get by without a cell phone.
Charles, thanks for your call. Let's go to Jody, Albuquerque, New Mexico. I'll be there in a few weeks. Hi, Jody. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good. You going to come up and see us when we're there?
I would love to, but I'm going to end up working that night. I'm currently on at work right now.
Okay.
But
go ahead.
I have a message for your speaker, and I have a message for you.
All right.
The doctor you had on about 2 or 3 weeks ago talking about baking soda for cancer.
Yes.
It works. I was riddled with tumors. I had one on my neck that looked like somebody had stuffed a thumb up underneath.
Oh my God. What'd you do? How'd you cure this?
I started using a cup to two cups of baking soda a day, where it's 2 teaspoons in about a 16-ounce glass. Now, it turns around and causes you excessive diarrhea, so you end up on the toilet. But you do that for about 2 or 3 hours. I do that every day. I've been doing that since your show. I didn't believe the guy. And my missus, I decided to try it. I had nothing else to lose. I started it, and my missus is freaking out. My family is freaking out. They can't believe that they're disappearing, because I've had this on my neck for a good 10 years, and it's just dissolved.
Catherine, doctor in Italy, has been doing this with some, he says, tremendous success.
Well, let me ask Jody. Jody, do you know if the tumors are malignant? Are they cancerous tumors or are they benign tumors?
I do not. I spent 6 years hiding in the medical field to avoid chemotherapy. I've got little brown spots on my legs that are also disappearing that I have always assumed was basically malignant melanoma. I got told that once by a doctor when I went in for a physical and she saw my legs that that's what she believed it was. I kind of got pushed off and on trying to get them to get me to go see cancer specialists and stuff, but because I had worked in the medical field, I ran across the people who were undergoing the treatment for chemotherapy.
The only thing that makes me nervous, because I know we're reaching millions of people right now, is what I've learned about cancer. Had I waited, George, 6 months until now to find this cancer, I probably would be dead within 2 to 4.
Mm.
So it's, you know, I know people come on and they say, you know, I have this bump and I have this lump or I have this skin thing and I didn't deal with it and I'm doing this natural approach. That scares the bejeebers out of me. That's why we have so many people dying of cancer, because at the very least, you got to figure out, what am I up against? What is this? Because the way cancer works, if you get the tumor out, then you can start working on, okay, now let me detox. But if that tumor is sitting in you, it is producing these cells, and once they metastasize, see, I didn't get this before. Once they spread, you are toast.
That's the problem.
That's the problem.
That's worse.
The tumor.
That's where things like turmeric go through your bloodstream, and they help you.
They do, and they can prevent the tumor in the first place. And if it's a little tumor, they can probably turn it around. If it's a big tumor and you're ignoring it, that tumor is pumping out every day millions of cells that are going around your body, and they are looking for a place to land. And if they land in your brain, your spleen, your lungs, your liver, your wherever, once they land, then you become stage 4. And once you have stage 4 cancer, that is terminal. And women with stage 4 breast cancer, for example, you know, most of them don't make it to 5 years. You got like a 2-year span.
Well, Catherine,
right on the cusp of that. So people, don't ignore these things. Get to a doctor. Find out what you're up against. Do your research.
Let me tell you, I'm so glad that we're talking to you tonight, and we're going to talk to you again next time and next time, because we really got worried about you, dear.
Well, thank you. And again, you know, thanks for your prayers, George. And I know, I mean, you're so near and dear to my heart, and I know the listeners out there, they're dear to my heart. And I have come to understand how loved I am in a really awesome way because of just the outpouring of prayers and support. And it's really been, you know, such an encouragement. And it's helped me get through a really rough patch. So thank you to you and to Tom and Lisa and all the people who work on your team, and especially to all your wonderful listeners.
Well, you've got a great following here. Catherine Albrecht has delivered us some incredible information about privacy, and she'll continue to do that. And always just say a little prayer for it. Never hurts. I'll be back in a moment. Leslie Kane joins us with a classic Coast to Coast show for you on Coast to Coast AM.